Hello and welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation, and I'm joined by Tristan Vick.
How's it going?
And this week we have a very special guest. We have FCDallas.com's very own Carter Blom. How are you doing, Carter?
How's it going, guys? I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Awesome. So this week, besides Carter, we've got a special episode planned for you. We're going to start off by doing our end of the season award show. And then once we've handed all of those out, Carter will be answering some questions for us about the off seasons going on and some of the stuff we can expect for next season. So let's go ahead and get started.
Some positives to an otherwise negative end to a season. So
I like
yes.
it.
Yes.
Finishing on a high note.
I'm down for that. So we will start things off with our favorite moment. Talk about your high note here. This will be the moment that you will remember the most from the season, the one that gave you the most hope, the one that has the most, will have the best memory for you at the end of the season. Carter, do you have a favorite moment for the season?
I'm gonna go a little off of it. Not necessarily the MLS season, but 2017 as a whole. For me, the entire CCL experience is hard to pass up. I mean, you look at a team that not only qualified for the knockout round, but advanced through the quarterfinal into the semifinal and almost went seconds away from going to extra time with incredible team like Pachuca that ended up winning the whole thing. Just an incredible experience all the way around for the organization, for myself. I had the good fortune of going to both Panama and to Pachuca for both of those trips. And I think really coming off of especially the Panama trip facing Arabe Unido, it was kind of the Kickstarter for a quick start to the season. And then, you know, the trip to Mexico, the adjustment of the schedule to allow a full week of training down there was cool. It was a great experience. And then a very disappointing result there. But I think there was a lot of sense of, you know, okay, we can compete at that level. There's a lot of promise for this MLS season. And I think that was really one of the high points of the season as a whole. I mean, there were some ups and downs there in the rest of April and May, and, you know, a couple road losses tossed in there. And then you got into international call-ups, and that's where things really started to unravel when, you know, Walker Zimmerman went down in late May, and you had Matt Hedges and Kellen Acosta called up, and nothing was ever really the same from that point on. If you're looking at the MLS season, I'd say that game in Montreal is maybe a little bit of a high point, just because you have Christian Coleman scoring two goals. You have kind of an all around solid performance from a group of guys missing a lot of your bigger names. And at that point, it seemed like, okay, you know, FC Dallas is for real. And everyone was saying, this is the start of a good run towards the end of the year, when really we know now that it was not. It was kind of the last win for quite some time, and that's where things really started to truly kind of go downhill all the way through the end of October.
I never really felt like the wheels were off the car. I just felt like they were only like half screwed on. And so it was, or maybe like one of the car wheels had like a flat tire. And so it was never like the season was lost until the very last literal minute of the season. But I can understand.
The stoppage time of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Extra time. So, I mean.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. And I took some time and I went back and looked at it. And if you look, you know, it's easy to point to right after that Montreal game. And that's where the 10 game winless run started. That's where kind of everything really started. But for me, it almost started in late May, because you had that game where you go to Chicago on a Thursday night, you play kind of a reserve lineup. There's three goals in the game in the first 10 minutes. You lose a 2-1 game to a very good Chicago team that was probably at one of their highest mm-hmm. points at that time. You rest a lot of your players. You're not, you know, it's not a result that you wanted, but, you know, given the lineup that you dressed, it's not terrible. You kind of rested some players coming into a Sunday game against the Dynamo at home, a very important game. And then you get 10 minutes into that game and Walker Zimmerman has to come out because of injury. And that's, he was one of the players who was not sent to Chicago for the very reason of resting up. He, as we know, was out for 6 weeks. And then that very next game, you had Matt Hedges and Kellen Acosta called in. You had everyone else kind of on that national team train called in. And that's where you really started to see some of the depth had to step up for the team. And there were a couple games here and there that, you know, there were points lost. And that's where it really started to feel like something maybe wasn't right. And then that Montreal game happened, like I talked about, and it seemed like, okay, you know, we got this done with some of the non-normal starter players. You know, imagine when those guys come back, it's going to be great. And then you had all of your guys come back from Gold Cup, from international duty, and they just never were really the same. And, you know, what you expected to maybe add to the team coming out of that game in Montreal never really added to it. And it was never, the solution was never really figured out on the field throughout the rest of the season. And like you said, it was kind of just one little thing after another. It never seemed like everything was wrong, but it was just little things adding up, and it never all kind of pieced itself together until maybe the last few weeks of the year when you started to pick up a couple points here and there. But even then, I mean, you go out in the penultimate game of the season in Seattle and you drop a result like that after giving up, you know, playing a good start to the game and then giving up a goal. And you could tell almost the confidence of the team was almost shot at that point. It was kind of like, oh, here we go again. And they just kept giving up a couple goals after that. And I think that's when it was really apparent that this team just, something wasn't quite right. And, you know, they kept trying to put it back together. But at that point, I don't know what there was to put back together. It was almost too little too late.
Yeah, we tried almost everything there was to try by that point.
Yeah.
Cool. I guess I'll go ahead and give my favorite moment of the season.
Go for it.
I'm going to go with Mauro Diaz's return in the Houston game. I think that was the Houston game, right?
He made his return as a sub in the Houston game and then made his first start in another Houston game.
Yeah.
So you really have your pick there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to go out with such a horrible injury and then to be able to come back just a couple months later, you know, in midway through the next season, and for the player that he is to this team, it was just a really nice moment for me to be able to witness it, because I actually got to see that one in person, and to see the fans welcome him back and the reception he got coming back was pretty special.
That's not a bad shout. Not a bad shout.
How about you, Tristan?
Yeah, so I have favorite moment of the season. I mean, I obviously was off a big high last year from the Open Cup win. Being in person for that was pretty awesome. And then later that week, we had our second kid. So it was like my last night of ever being able to do anything for the next 5 years. So I went for the RSL match where Jesus Ferreira got a goal. Reggie Cannon, I think, got a run out in that match. But it was obviously RSL had a pretty awful season, but it was good to see the younger talent getting a run out. And there was some glimpses of a future for both FC Dallas and the U.S. national team, assuming, or if he potentially decides to play for the United States. We don't know. He's got many years before he has to make that decision, but I know that he's getting pressured into it. Nonetheless, it was something that at the end of the season, you kind of can look back on and say, who are a couple of the names that you can put down on the sheet for players coming from the academy? And one name that we haven't been able to put in recently has been a striker. Got some great midfielders and even some decent defenders and goalkeepers, but the striker position really hasn't hit for us. And to see Jesus Ferreira play well, get a goal, made me really think that potentially the future's out there. We were just clicking on all cylinders. And I remember I live about 2 miles from the stadium. And so anytime I can hear the fireworks go off before the TV shows the goal, it's a good thing. And we had 5 of them that night. So beyond thinking they were going to wake up my kids, I was really excited every time I heard them. So that's my best memory of the season so far. I did like the end. I would say the last match of the season is a close runner up for pure dramatics. It didn't turn out the way you wanted, but it was probably the most exciting last day of the season that MLS has had in a long time. The way that they did the production and starting all the games off, and ESPN doing the look-in for all the various matches, and then finishing on the San Jose match was the perfect way to do it. So I would say that's a close runner-up, because there's nothing like being on top of cloud nine and then being on your knees and kind of wondering what just happened in about a 20-second time span. So that's a close runner-up, though.
Tristan loves him the drama.
That was, that game almost killed me.
yeah,
all the back and forth, and you know, of course, from a planning perspective of having two different scenarios ready, from we're in playoffs to, you know, thanks for a great season, just everything. That was just a chaotic last 5 minutes of the game.
Were you down on the field with the players when they found out?
No, we were in the press box. And it was funny because everyone in the press box the game in front of you was over. It was a 5-1 game at that point in the last 5 minutes of the game and then stoppage time. And so everyone, we put the San Jose game on and one of the TVs, and everyone stopped watching the FC Dallas game and moved to the back of the press box and was watching the end of the San Jose game. And of course we had everything, graphics and all of that kind of goes into the digital planning in terms of announcing, you know, we've clinched playoffs and all that. We had all that teed up, ready to go. You know, San Jose game hit stoppage time and you're literally ready to hit send on everything. And then the 93rd minute rolls around in that game, and of course they score a goal, and just you went from just on the edge of hitting pure elation to, wow, it's over, that's it, and we're cleaning out lockers tomorrow. Like,
yeah.
It's just the swing of emotions during the course of that whole game were incredible. Even in the first half, I mean, you come out and you let up a goal early and you just think, well, I mean, that's kind of the perfect summation of the last part of the season. And then you start to mount a comeback. You get a goal right as San Jose, you know, they had gone up early, and then, you know, they went even in that game. And then Dallas went ahead and was in a playoff spot and then went back kind of below the line and above the line. Just, I think it was 9 changes of that 6th and final position over the course of that game. Just in an hour and a half, 2 hours in real time, it just, I don't think anything will ever top the dramatics of that.
I'll give you one real quick one off the top of my head, but it's not club soccer, but the World Cup qualifier was near that type of level of drama as well. That's yes. The only, and that as one, you said, the back and forth, it totally jogged my memory as far as the stress levels of not knowing what the outcome would be.
And we were very in very close proximity to the U.S. national team heartbreak. So just sitting there and watching that happen on a club level, it was almost like, wow, here we go again. Kind of right there at the end. Like,
yeah,
everything has to be perfect for this to happen. And yeah, a very surreal juxtaposition between the two.
Yeah. So let's move on. And we'll go with our goal of the season. So, Carter, what was your goal of the season?
I struggled with this one. We had, of kind of the 5 that we have on our digital voting for goal of the year.
Plug.
Three of them came for, yeah, plug. Three of them came from the Houston game, the Houston home game, in which Tesho had a great goal. I think it was Maxi had a great goal. Mino Figueroa had an impossible angle strike he put upper 90, which for me, I liked, because we see that in training a lot. He tries those long distance free kicks where if a defender gets in front of it, it might literally kill the defender because he just has a blistering shot. But for me, I think my favorite goal, kind of going back to the RSL game, has to be Jesus Ferreira's, just in the cool moment of seeing a kid who literally grew up playing in the club since the age of 9, become the second youngest player in MLS to score a goal, doing it in his debut, doing it in the stadium where he watched his dad play for so long. I think just the coolness of the moment as a whole for me is probably my favorite. Now, I mean, technically it was a good goal. He was able to bring the ball down in the box and
Very composed.
No nerves whatsoever. Took one touch and put a shot past the keeper. But just the entire moment, maybe, you know, there's better goals in terms of shots or whatever throughout the year. But as a whole, I think that's got to be my favorite.
Yeah, I think at the next home game after that, he just scored his first MLS Go game. The next home game, I don't think he dressed out. And I was at the game and I was walking on the concourse and lo and behold, there's Jesus Ferreira just hanging out with his buddies.
Yep.
Like, no big deal. Just, I just scored my first MLS goal. Earth. No big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a great person off the field too. And he's someone that I'm excited to watch really come into his own in terms of a professional player, because he's going to be a good player on the field, but a really good person off the field as well.
Very cool. So, Tristan, do you have a goal of the season?
Yep. I went off the five that were on the FC Dallas list, not for lack of trying to find a good one. I guess my runner-up would be my favorite moment, which was the Jesus Ferreira goal. But as far as pure what reminded me of what I like most about watching FC Dallas was the Rudy goal against Portland back in April. The curler into the top left. It was what we could expect to see for at least half a season from Rudy, and showed that the team really was firing on nearly all cylinders going into, like Cutter's mentioned, that annoying international break that happens every couple of years with CONCACAF and Gold Cup. But nonetheless, it was a fun moment to have. Portland team that played really well this weekend. And I mean, if you didn't watch the Houston-Portland match this Sunday, it was quite a good match to see. I know we're not supposed to like Houston, but how can you not after what they've gone through? And they're looking quite a run. So it was good to see them win. But at the same time, my goal is definitely going to be the Rudy goal against Portland.
In terms of pure technical skill, I think that was my favorite one as well, just because he's got three guys on him. Basically, he's outside the box. He sends it across his body and puts it upper 90. Tesho's shot was great because he was just a mile away. But
it's a good run too. But
yeah, and Cole Mons was great. I mean, it was an incredible assist from Guerreiro with the 50-yard ball that he's able to chest down in Montreal. But yeah, Maxi's goal was very nice as well.
Yeah.
So I think that was my goal of the midseason. And I was...
There weren't too many after that.
No, it's true.
No.
So I would say that for me, it was a toss-up between the Arruti goal where he just took the no-look cross-the-body shot and sent it past the keeper from way out. That one, I don't know why I just really like that goal. Well, I do know why. It was pretty good. And then also the one that Tristan just mentioned. And I think for me, that one still wins out as my goal of the season for all the reasons that Tristan just mentioned.
Yeah, it was a good goal. And I mean, for people who are just getting into FC Dallas, I think it's a great example of kind of the way that our players are kind of given some freedom and the way that they're told basically go out there, create opportunities. And when you get the chance, pull the trigger. It leads to a lot of wasted opportunities, but it also leads to some pretty spectacular goals at times.
Yeah, if someone, I think it might have been Jason Poon on Twitter, mentioned that like he has no problem with Rudy taking a bunch of wild shots because he has the ability to make those kind of shots every now and then, and it's totally worth it.
Yep. All right, so let's get to some actual people and players. We've got a Young Player of the Award, a Young Player of the Season Award, and then a Player of the Season Award. There's a good case to be made for somebody getting both, but Dustin, why don't you kick us off and break it down? Let's start with the Young Player of the Year, and who did you think was the best? We're going with under 23 or somewhere around there. Olympic eligible would kind of be our criteria. So,
gotcha. Yeah. So for me, it was a toss up. It was between Jesse Gonzalez, who kept us in games that we shouldn't have been in. Our defense was making mistake after mistake, and he just came up with dramatic save after dramatic save. And Carlos Grezo. And for me, the winner of the Young Player of the Season would be Carlos Grezo. They're both 22. He started 30 games. He played in 31. He led the team in tackles per game and was tied for third in assists. Now, granted, he only had three, but that was still third in the team. And according to whoscored.com, he was tied for the third most tidy player, meaning that he made the third least bad touches, if you will. So I really was impressed with how he was able to come in, sit in front of the defense, and really, really make that position his own. And for those reasons, Carlos Grezo was my young player of the season.
Good shout. I can see that. He definitely was the most consistent player this year. Carter, did you concur or did you differ?
For me, I think Carlos Grezo is easy to consider as your young player of the season. I mean, we saw that in 2016, just the incredible impact that he made right out of the gate. But I think it's really hard to overlook the development that Jesse Gonzalez made this season in terms of really taking back a starting role that Chris Seitz took over last year, kind of in the early portion of the season. He goes away, kind of makes his national team decision, gets called up for Gold Cup, you know, really as kind of a, hey, thanks for choosing us type call up through the Gold Cup. Not really with any intention of actually playing, but just getting the experience, getting into camp, seeing what he's got. And then he came out of that and really had, just like the other two coming out of U.S. camp, really had kind of a lull in the season and really matching what the rest of the team was doing at the time. So it's hard to really point at any one player, but Jesse went through a really rough stretch there. And then we saw in September, almost every save he made was incredible. He had three shutouts during that month, you know, a couple games where he gave up multiple goals in Atlanta where didn't really have a whole lot of help in front of him and still made some really good saves in that game as well. And there's a lot of games where he single-handedly kept them in it. So I think looking long-term, maybe I think Jesse is my young player of the year simply because of his development and especially over the latter half of the season really proved that he is the number one guy for this team and is capable of holding on to that job for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, that's fair. He definitely did all of those things. Tristan, did you side with Jesse Gonzalez or did you have somebody else?
Yeah, so I'm looking at the U15's roster on the U.S. Development Academy because I wanted to go real left wing here, but they just don't do good stats on this website. So I
they
did.
Try.
Yeah, they do. They do. I thought Jesse was really good, but I've been pretty critical of him at times. And while the development was definitely something that makes him one of our best players this season, I really was impressed with Grezo, and I thought it was a little bit ridiculous. He wasn't getting more of a shout on the Ecuador national team, as much as that would have hurt FC Dallas with all the other call-ups. He's my shout for young player of the year just because his passing is second to none in many respects, but also going forward next season, it's a lot easier to convince a top center back to potentially come to FC Dallas or any other defender when you can tell them that you have a guy like Grezo sitting in front of them to kind of do all the dirty work and give the wingers and anyone coming down the middle a couple of nicks before they get to him. That's always something that I like to see. So it's a close race between the two of them, but I'm going to end up going with Grezo just because I think that he plays a really vital role for the team and the defense. I would have liked to see a little bit more, not necessarily leadership, but just decisiveness with the defense, a little more communication with Jesse. Some of our goals were early on in the match, like in LA Galaxy. And if you maybe had a little bit more communication in some of these matches, we may have prevented those early deficits from being created. So that's my only thing on that.
Interesting. Yeah. Going into today, I would have thought that we would have all chosen Jesse Gonzalez, but when I sat down and started kind of really thinking about it, I ended up changing my mind last minute. So it's pretty interesting.
I think it's hard to really have a bad nominee for that. I mean, there's so many young players. Even someone, I mean, not over the course of the year, but like Paxton Pomykal, who in his couple games that we saw him was really composed, and you could really see he didn't play like a 16, 17-year-old. And even someone like Ja'Cory Hayes, who for my money in that New York Red Bulls game where he got his second yellow card 30 minutes in, he was the best player on the field for FC Dallas in that first 30 minutes. Concurrent. And I think you look at a young player like that, and kind of the ceiling that he has to grow into that role and really learn from an opportunity like that and kind of play a little calmer. I think there's so many young players that really had maybe not strong entire seasons because we only saw them for bits and pieces, but I think there's a lot of names within that category. Yeah, definitely
the door seems to be open for a lot of those guys to come in and really make their mark on next season.
Yep, I would agree. Some positives. All right, so the final one, obviously, is our player of the season. FC Dallas tends to not have just one flashy player here and there that kind of stands above the rest, but how'd you guys come out on this one?
We kind of need to, invest in a drum roll machine or something for this one.
I can try.
There we go.
That's the best thing I got.
Do some post-editing.
That's right. We can do that. Dustin does all the hard stuff. I'm the ideas guy, so go for it, D.
All right, so my player of the season was Maxi Arruti. We you know, in the last episode where we kind of went over the season breakdown, we chronicled a lot of his troubles and his goal-scoring drought towards the end of the season, how, you know, I thought that the red card he got against Sporting Kansas City kind of got in his head, and that's when we started seeing his numbers drop off. But if you look at the season as on a whole and you look at his stats across the season, he played in 32 matches, which is one of the highest. I think Barrios was in 34.
He was in all of them.
Yeah. And he led the team in goals with 12. He was second in assists. And for me, what really pushed him over the edge as far as being my player of the season is not necessarily the goals, which are great. It's the way he always, it's just his engine where he comes back and he actually will really get in and get stuck in on defense. He was fourth in tackles per game behind only Grezo, Grana, and Figueroa. And the closest forward to Arruti in tackles per game was Barrios, and he was 15th. And Arruti was second in fouls per game, which kind of just shows you that he's got the metal, he's got the will to come back and help out on defense when he's needed, and not just when he's needed, but all the time. And for those reasons, Maxi Arruti, you are my player of the season.
Spoken like a true Liverpool fan. He worked hard.
That's right.
That's a different route than I would have gone. But
which route did you go,
not
Tristan?
My award to give. I went with Mr. Barrios, the man with the hair. I remember when I went to my first FC Dallas game and I saw them warming up on the side and they were doing their little quick sprints on the side behind the goal. And I kept seeing this guy do it. And like, he just kind of seemed like, yeah, I'm doing these sprints, but like, these really aren't what I'm capable of. I need a bigger place to go. And then he gets in the match and I'm like, okay, why is this guy not starting? Like, I don't understand. And I think it was because we didn't quite know what we had at the time beyond a really fast, talented dribbler. And so it turned into something much bigger than that. I think that Jesse Gonzalez had some important saves that really saved a few points during the season. But I really thought Barrios creating opportunities. I thought the way that he increased his assist total, maybe he needed a couple more goals this year than last season, but the way that he really was the number one reliable option after we lost Castillo midseason last year, who people forget, but like Fabian Castillo was probably one of the 10 best players in MLS when he left. And to just kind of assume that responsibility playing on both sides of the pitch, The only thing he could have done better was maybe grow a couple inches, but like, he's not going to do that. He's 26. So I think Barrios is somebody that we can build around offensively And I think this season, though, he was very important. He played in every match. As we saw this year, that was not something you could say for pretty much anyone else on our team, whether they're even available because of injuries or international duty. But if you looked at the team sheet and you saw that Barrios was out there, you knew that we were at least going to be threatening. And I really liked that. And I think he kind of stepped his game up to kind of work around some of the more physical defending that we saw from teams like Atlanta. And when you go up to like Vancouver with Tim Parker and some of those guys that really can mark players out of the match, I think Barrios kind of adapted his game to still be threatening and effective. So I'm going to give it to Barrios.
That's a solid shout, Tristan.
I appreciate that.
Carter, what about you? Let's get a drum roll for Carter here.
Let's get another name. Let's do 3 for 3. Yeah.
Well, I think you both nailed the top two candidates. For me, I would have picked Maxi Arruti. Therefore, I did pick Michael Barrios, but I would have picked...
Was Tristan more convincing than me?
maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit. No, I like the stats. I like the stats, and you made me reconsider just a little bit while you were going through your stat lines.
I had his age. I had his age, and I had... Well, that was pretty much it, so...
You had his assists. You mentioned you didn't have the exact number, but...
I think it was like 13, 14, something like that.
12. So. Yeah, 12.
All right, there you go.
But for me, I think... Maxi Arruti, up until August, would have absolutely been MVP. I think we saw just how much work he does, both on and off the ball, really catch up to him, playing the most minutes that he's had over the course of a season this year. And when you take in CCL and everything that he went through, I think you really kind of saw him hit a wall late in the season. And as Maxi's scoring dried up, as did the rest of the team. But the player that really for me maintained his level over the course of the entire season was Barrios. And during some of those games, during that stretch of winless runs and everything, I think Michael Barrios was one of the constants in terms of always kind of producing at a similar level, producing chances, producing shots, not necessarily taking them, but with his crosses and seeing a different facet of his game with the sheer number of assists that he was able to put up. His career high in his previous 2 years was 2 assists in each of those 2 seasons, and he put up 6 times at her. He might have had 14 now that I think about it. But it's just, I think with him, when you see MVP, I think of the entire year. I think of someone who really had it from start to finish, and for me, he really embodied that. Not to say that Maxi Arruti doesn't earn his accolades as well, because he had an incredible season, a career year for him as well in every statistical category. But I think over the course of the entire season, Michael Barrios was more pivotal game in and game out, in my mind.
Yeah, I would second that. I mean, you didn't see him getting rested or sat when he maybe went on a dry streak or anything of that sort. So I think that the coach would probably agree that he was probably the most important player when it came to putting that lineup together. Probably not what you would have answered going into the season, I don't think, but that's why you play the games.
Absolutely.
So
it's true. You were listening to the Dallas Soccer Show with Dustin Nation and Tristan Vick.
All right, so we've wrapped up the awards. That's just a brief recap. If you, for whatever reason, only tuned in for the last match of the season, that's kind of the general gist of the season. Players that have developed and done well, and then some players that maybe didn't come off as expected, guys like Coleman. But we're moving on to an off season, and as much as Carter wants to kick back and relax and forget about soccer for a couple of weeks, we've got tons of questions. First and foremost, though, everyone wants to know about the next players that are coming up on the radar. I specifically am kind of curious about the scouting within FC Dallas. It feels like everywhere in MLS and in U.S. soccer is in flux right now, from who's going to be the next coach of the national team to who's going to lead the federation to what's going to happen to the Columbus Crew. But one thing we can't ask you about is we're curious about the types of signings that the the coaching staff and looks for. And then also, I'm just kind of curious in general, because we have so many South Americans, what type of scouting regimen and setup do we have at FC Dallas? I've never really heard any breakdown of that, but I hear about it all the time with European clubs.
We saw Clavejo go to like Eastern Europe or so. So
quick story on Fernando. He checked into Sofia, Bulgaria, which everyone, of course, you know, Fernando goes on a lot of these scouting trips. He, Luis Muzy, even Oscar Pereja goes a little bit in the off season. They all really have a hand in getting a firsthand look at any players that are coming in. There's a little bit more depth to the scouting structure, and it's actually something that the club has been building over kind of the last two thirds of the season, is a more robust scouting department. I think more on that will kind of come out maybe in the off season, but kind of a work in progress there. But it's a lot of a hands-on approach. It's a lot of, you know, these guys all come, the coaching staff, the technical staff, they all come from South America. They all have their contacts there. They all kind of have their own kind of informants on the ground. And so that's where a lot of some of these names kind of come from. Everyone has to be involved in kind of every decision, whether it's Fernando, Oscar, Dan Hunt, even someone like Jimmy Smith, who's the club COO, the one who manages the money and does everything from a financial standpoint. There's a brain trust there that really is in on every signing and every scouting, and a player is not signed without everyone kind of signing off on that. But a quick backstory on Fernando is he's friends with a lot of fans on Facebook. He's a very open guy, a very friendly guy. He goes on a lot of these trips, and there's some trips where he doesn't check in at all on Facebook. Those are kind of the top secret ones, the ones that really might maybe have the most bite. The ones where he checks in on Facebook, he's checking in on Facebook for a reason. It's because he's trying to maybe create a little buzz, create a little excitement, tease maybe a little bit to the fans of what's happening. Sometimes those do come to fruition in terms of a player, but in particular this trip to Bulgaria, I saw I'm friends with him on Facebook on my personal account. I saw he checked in there, and I knew right away the reason he checked in to a town called Sofia. His granddaughter's name is Sofia. So there's a lot of excitement of, oh, he's in Bulgaria. Who are you looking for in Bulgaria? And I ran into him at the office a week later, and I said, everyone's making a big deal about this, but I know exactly why you checked in. He goes, oh, really? Why? And I said, because your granddaughter's name's Sophia. He goes, yes, you're the one who got that, who understood that. He does it a little bit to kind of pull on some legs and create some excitement. And
I think within hours,
kind of showcase some of the places he goes.
Three names on Twitter of like potential South American players at FC Bulgaria or whatever.
Absolutely. And look, he doesn't go on these trips just for fun. He does go and he's scouting players and he's doing his due diligence in all of these. But the ones where he checks into Facebook, he's a little more open to kind of sharing where he is, or he's in this case just so happens to really like the name of the town that he's stopping in. That's so funny. There's no rhyme or reason to it, but that one in particular, I know that kind of raised a lot of feathers, and I thought about kind of putting it out there on Twitter or doing something on it, but I decided to kind of let that one sit for a little while. And,
well, there you go.
Everyone really got excited about that, but at the end of the day,
we needed some hope, man.
His granddaughter's name is Sophia.
We wanted to have something to think about other than the way the season ended.
So there's a lot to think about.
He was at Boca River this weekend, it looks like.
Yeah, he made a trip to Argentina. He checked in on Facebook there. He's made a couple other smaller trips in the last few weeks, even before the season ended. That's the thing about his job and the job of Luis Muzy, who's his assistant technical director. These guys' jobs really start to heat up in, you know, September, October, to where they're going on scouting trips. They're already having discussions about the coming season before the current season's even over, because they have to have that kind of head start on it. So they already have kind of a short list of players they're interested in, kind of teams that they're interested in dealing with. They've done a lot of that legwork. So now, you know, the next few weeks and the next few months is really just tying off and really polishing some of those some of those interests and seeing what can be brought in the off season. So we're about 60% away in the process of, you know, the scouting from starting to finish. You know, there's some names out there. There's some positions that they're going after. They kind of have a short list of maybe some players that they really like, and now it's just a matter of figuring out what the right deal is within that and who they can bring in, and keeping an eye on the salary cap, keeping an eye on all of that. I mean, there's so many factors that go into a signing other than just is the player good or not. But it's a whole long process, and it's something that we try and chronicle a little bit when we can, but we also kind of have to respect the technical staff and knowing what they're doing. And there's a competitive advantage to everything that goes on for those guys in terms of whether other teams know they're there or whatnot. So it's for the most part, it's something we kind of let Fernando dictate how public he wants to be based on where he checks in on Facebook.
Yeah, I find the MLS transfer season to be somewhat underwhelming relative to other leagues, and I could never really figure it out, but there are so many other types of forces at play that some leagues don't have, like salary caps. So,
and a big part of that is most of the world is on a different calendar.
Yeah, that's
so when you talk about mid-season signings in MLS, that's when you get some of your bigger names coming in, because that's when other clubs around the world are willing to part with some of their bigger names. And that's also when you see, you know, the rumors like with Kellen Acosta, you know, yeah, that's going to come up in the summer because that's when all the other teams in the world are really looking at some of their offseason acquisitions. And so MLS as a whole is kind of set up on a very odd schedule to where December is a big period to start signing players, but summer is also just as big, if not bigger, in terms of some of the names that you bring in because of what they're doing elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, I find it odd that the MLS calendar, because of the way it is, a lot of that these new players come in the January window usually, but also the players don't usually leave though until the summer. And so it's a weird delayed entry exit sometimes if you want them there for the preseason training. With that said, what type of an effect will a World Cup year have on some of that scouting that they're doing? Are they going to kind of just see what happens? Are they going to get some bargains before players get in the shop window? Is there any type of a philosophy with the coaching staff on that?
I think by and large, the job doesn't really change. I think in a World Cup year, maybe it gets a little bit easier in terms of there's so much more focus on all of these teams and all of these players and playing on some big stage in terms of World Cup qualifying. You get a really good look at what some of these maybe fringe national team players from around the world can do on a high level, as opposed to just kind of some regular league games. But in terms of an overall philosophy, I don't think it changes a whole lot. I think, you know, there's a question mark of, you know, with the U.S. missing World Cup qualifying, what does MLS do with the schedule next year? I think, you know, you look at, there's a lot of players that represent other countries in the World Cup, but at the same time, taking a 2-3 week break in the middle of the season is a big undertaking for the league. So I think there's a question mark there, and I don't know that they have an answer yet. So I don't know, as a technical staff or a coaching staff, how much advantage you can take of that, because you don't know whether I imagine the league will take a break, but it's a big undertaking in terms of stopping your domestic league when your national team domestically is not playing during that time. It's a big question. So I don't know that you can fully bank on it one way or another, or not knowing what the schedule looks like next year, when you may or may not have these players. And if they do get called to a World Cup, if you're bringing in someone who gets called to a World Cup, is he going to miss one or two games, or is he going to miss five or six? You know, I think there's a lot of questions there, and I'm sure some information has been distributed to some of the technical staffs and teams around the league. But on a public level, it's very hard to judge what the off season looks like. And, you know, I think part of that is, FC Dallas is getting a much earlier jump on the offseason than they have in the last few years. So maybe it's something that by the time we get towards the end of the conference final and MLS Cup, where the team has traditionally been kind of pushing towards in the last few years, maybe we'll have some more answers there and we can judge it better on a public level. But I think right now it's very tough to look at a strategy behind World Cup players and non-World Cup players and how that affects rosters. I think it's definitely something to keep an eye on and something interesting that'll be kind of fun to watch over the next few months and, of course, through the World Cup next year. But it's a very tricky situation from a scheduling standpoint, from a league standpoint as a whole, in terms of trying to latch on to some of those fringe every 4 years soccer fans. And it's something that is the missing out on a World Cup on a soccer level is huge. But in terms of growing the game and everything that the World Cup means in terms of the game as a whole in this country, I think is almost even bigger. And we're going to see in the next 3 to 4 years a very big kind of void here, I think, of maybe some fans that weren't picked up on because the U.S. is in our World Cup. I think you'll have still your soccer fans that tune into the World Cup and are interested in it. You might have a couple fringe, you know, sports fans who get enticed into it. But, you know, the World Cup fever around the U.S. is something that the league and teams latch onto every 4 years. And not doing that next year is going to be very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. It's tough to get people without no Americans playing to sit and watch soccer sometimes. And maybe that's what they need.
Show a bunch of pictures of Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah. No. I'm still scarred by that last minute equalizer from 2014. that's interesting to hear though. I hadn't even thought about that. I forgot about the league break they take every summer. So for the World Cup. So that'll be interesting to see. As far as the players that are there, the contracts, when would FC Dallas fans kind of know who's coming back and who's not? Is I know that there's like some weird deciphering that can be done with who's practicing, and Dustin's tried to explain it to me, and I think he did successfully, but it's impossible to actually keep track in your head since the players switch every time. So you have this running list of players practicing, but when will we know who's on the team? From loans and all the other stuff.
There's a deadline for teams that have not made MLS Cup of just after Thanksgiving, where they have to submit all that information to the league. You see some teams are starting their announcements already. I think Orlando City is already out. You know, some of LA's moves are starting to come out. It's really kind of, it's on a team by team basis. There is a drop dead date of, I believe it's Cyber Monday this year, of when kind of teams that are not in MLS Cup really have to start making those decisions, which is why, like 2 years ago when the team got knocked out in the conference final to Portland, 2 days later they were already making that announcement, because they're pushed to by the league because there's such a short off season. I think if I were a betting man, I think we'll know officially maybe right before Thanksgiving, so maybe 2-3 weeks at the most on official word of here's who's back, here's who's not. I think there's some speculation out there, not all of it is true but not all of it is false, on who may or may not be coming back based on practices. The thing with this offseason training is players who are not under contract for next season cannot train, because there's a legitimate reason behind it. Because if a player's hurt in off-season training and then the club goes, oh, well, we're going to decline your option. Well, they were hurt in off-season training. So that's kind of a jeopardy zone maybe for the players' union and the league. You don't want an option decided on an injury picked up in kind of off-season training. So the thing is, a player has to be under contract for the following season for them to be able to participate. It doesn't mean that players that are not practicing right now are out of the picture. Some of them are, you know, doing some work on the side. Some of them are getting some much needed healing time in terms of injuries, getting injuries repaired. There's players kind of not practicing right now that are not out of the picture. There's players that aren't practicing right now that are completely out of the picture. So it's, there's a good base level based on who's been out there, whose contracts have been picked up option wise. Maybe they haven't been announced yet, but the players that are practicing are the ones that are under contract already for next year. So any of the names that are out there, I mean, these are guys that are in the picture, you know, as of this moment. I mean, you know, something can always come around, but you know, the players that have been reported to be at practice are kind of your core group of guys for next season.
What about lone players like Grana and Luis Gonzalez and those guys? When will we know whether they'll be back or not?
That's traditionally about the same time as they do the options. I think loans technically run through the end of the calendar year. Like Anibal Chala back in Ecuador, his loan is through the end of 2017. Traditionally, teams have an idea of what they're doing with that about the same time they announce contract options. So I think you'll see some of that. There might be one or two where they do some holding off. There's still maybe some negotiations with the team that they're loaned from in terms of, you know, every loan is different, whether there's a buyout clause or whether there's a loan with an option to buy or however it's worked out. Some of that is a little more in depth than just kind of a contract option or not. So, but for the most part, I think most of that comes out and will come out about the same time as the contract options.
Gotcha. Earlier, we kind of talked about the speculation on social media about different players, and one of the names that's kind of being bantered about is Lee Nguyen from New England, and there's a hashtag and everything, bring Lee home.
It's amazing what social media can do, right?
Yeah. Would that be something that you would want to see happen, like from a personal level? Or I know you probably can't speak to it from a club level, but yeah, he did follow Big D soccer. So
he did follow Big D soccer. He did like Jason Poon's tweet. I did see that. I think, I mean, on a personal level, I mean, Lee Nguyen is a graduate of the great Plano East Senior High School, which is where I happen to go to high school as well. So I think it'd be great to bring a guy like that back just on a completely non-soccer level. But I think it's an interesting fit. It's an interesting discussion. I think I don't know what interest level is there from a club side, from a player side, whether it's, you know, having a good laugh or something about a possibility on his end. I have no idea. And to be quite frank, there can't be any discussions between Lee Nguyen and the club because he's under contract by New England right now. So I think it's all speculation at this point. I don't think there's actually
been a conversation. Come and get me.
No, you know, maybe he says, hey, whoever, you know, New England's got their own problems right now in terms of who's in charge and how they're shaping up that roster. But if he wants to come home, maybe there's a discussion to be made. I don't know. But for right now, I think that's a lot of that's just speculation. I don't see on the field. I don't see that really coming to fruition this offseason. I could be wrong, but I just don't see it. I think it's all kind of good natured social media fun.
My only take on that is that I think it's nice idea, bring the local kid home, but anybody that
you're also looking at a veteran who's going to be looking for a sizable payday, and I don't know that fits in with what the club's wanting to do.
And it flies in the face of everything that we saw this year from teams like Atlanta, where you look to Latin America and you find that young talent. If you ask John Arnold about it this weekend on the phone-in, they talked about it, that Argentina and some of the other South American countries just seem to roll off number 10s that are ripe for MLS, and they fit right in. And so why go
look no further than Mauro Diaz? I mean,
exactly. Yeah, that was the name. It was him, Almiron, and just how well, and
Nicolas Lodero,
Valeri, I mean, this year. Yeah. And so there's so many, and this year, especially with, I'm sure that's one of the things that Fernando's been doing down in South America, is looking at some of those potentials to bring up. I think that it's maybe wiser to look for the midfield than to maybe go for the striker, since the striker is turning into sometimes a almost unnecessary position, depending on how you play. But I think it would fly in the face of A, what the club's philosophy is, but B, what you see is worked this past season.
I would not disagree with you there.
So as much as I like Lee and the hair, it's not really what we're going for.
Absolutely.
All right. Dustin, you got anything else on transfers you want to talk about or any roster stuff? I think Cutter's been more than generous.
Yeah, he's covered all the questions I had. How about you?
I'm just kind of curious, going forward, what are some of the names outside of guys like Paxton on these U.S. these academy teams that we need to maybe look out for? I know that Brian Reynolds, I never got to see him play in the U-17 World Cup. I watched every match, never got to see him really get on the field. So I was kind of...
He got a mercy substitution at the end of their final game.
That's the one I missed. I was running in a 5K during the quarterfinals.
Gonna have to question your commitment levels, Tristan.
You got a
thanks for coming all the way to India substitution for the final 10 minutes in a 4-1 game. But he's one that's kind of disappointing. I mean, you look at how much time he spent with that club throughout the entire season. He's been away from Dallas-Fort Worth for probably 70% of the calendar year 2017, which when you think about a 16-year-old being away for that long, it's incredible. But he was one who was kind of signed, was never truly in the picture for this year. I think the plan was for him to be with the national team the whole season. So he will start to maybe make a name for himself in terms of practice and starting to push for time next season. I think you obviously have Paxton Pomykal, Jesus Ferreira, who are going to be seen, I think, a lot more next year in whatever roles they do play. Reggie Cannon, who I'm an unabashed fan of.
I'm a big fan of Reggie as well.
What he can do. I
can't teach pace.
I tweeted a few weeks ago about, maybe it was last week, about an academy product out at Furman University and Ben Hale and goal. And that was automatically picked up as a, hey, FC Dallas is about to sign this guy by some people. But by no means do any of these names mean that they're being signed tomorrow. But I think you have Ben Hale, who's really having a great year. He redshirted last year, had a knee injury, picked up in the national championship game with the U-18s a year and a half ago, and really had some recurring struggles with that, and really coming into his own this year as a freshman, really doing well out there. You have a guy by the name of Brandon Cervania at Wake Forest, who's doing great things, being called into national team camps. I think he's a really good prospect. And then you have a couple guys, you know, locally. You have, I think, four academy products playing at SMU right now. One of them is by the name of Jordan Cano, who's a center back, kind of got some size on him. He's a senior. I want to say he's the team captain there at SMU this year. He's a good possibility to maybe look at in the offseason. I don't know what discussions have been maybe had on his inclusion, but there's a lot of guys in college that are really continuing to develop. If you look at the academy, there are some names coming up through the academy ranks, but really with the signing of Paxton and Jesus and Brian, you took really the top talents out of the academy already. I think there's a couple names. Brian Padilla is a name that in a year or two absolutely could be signed. He's a promising forward. There's a kid on the U-19 team this year, Christian Kappas, who's playing really well. He's practicing with the first team every single day. But logistically, I don't think, and I don't know this for sure, but I don't think the club can sign him because he played with an academy team in Houston last year. I believe you have to be in the club for a full year before you can be signed as a homegrown. So I think, you know, he's a name that in a year could be a really good possibility. There's a couple kids who have come in from Ghana actually playing with the academy right now that are in a similar boat where they have to be here for a while before they can even be considered to be signed by the pro team, but some really good talents. Yeah. I think really going into this off season, we saw last year the signing of players straight from the academy. You might have one or two of those this off season, just depending on how it goes. But I really think signing players from college is going to be the bigger storyline this off season. I think there you're going to have some players who are a little more developed, who have gotten some playing time and are a little more ready to go. I think you've taken some of the kids out of the academy and signed them already, the ones who are ready to go on a pro level. So you really have to let that redevelop and let some talent really grow back there before you can go and rob that cupboard.
And those players, good. Those players that are coming out of college, they have to go through the draft, right?
So if this is all MLS roster rules, and I amaze myself every day with how much I can just kind of rattle off about some of this stuff that 2-3 years ago when I joined the club, I had no earthly idea, just like you guys, on some of the complexities of all of these rules. But the thing with academy players is when they graduate from the FC Dallas Academy, they go off to school. They play whatever division, whatever school they want to. In order to maintain their homegrown eligibility, a lot of these kids have to come back and do a certain number of hours of training in the off season with the club. So you'll see during June and July, when the team's doing their night practices, there's usually about 30 kids here training as former academy kids back during the summer on their college break, doing training here. That's an MLS rule to maintain their homegrown eligibility. They have to do a certain number of hours of training each summer to maintain their year-to-year eligibility. And there are kids that go that graduate from the academy and just aren't invited back. And those are the kids that would then go through the draft. But all these kids that are coming through college that would be signings are guys that have been here, have met their homegrown requirements. So these are players that would not have to go through the draft for FC Dallas to sign them before January 18th or whenever the draft is this year. I don't know that it's officially been announced, but somewhere around there is usually where it is. So before that time, FC Dallas can sign any of its academy products who have maintained their homegrown status. No problem, no questions asked. The same thing was done with Aaron Guillen a few years ago, coming out of Florida Gulf Coast. It's not something that the club has done a whole lot of, but I think you'll start to see it a little bit more with some of these players, but they would not have to go through the draft. Now, if FC Dallas doesn't sign them right after their senior season, they can go into the draft. Dallas can still select them in the draft. The same thing was done with Marco Carrizales last year. They selected him in the fourth round. He's a kid who had still homegrown eligibility, but just wasn't someone that they wanted to sign right away. They drafted him, brought him in for preseason because they wanted to get another look at him, but they ended up cutting him. And had he been signed because he was drafted, he would have maintained his homegrown eligibility there. If a player goes unselected in the draft, his homegrown eligibility is gone. So you look at a guy like Eduardo Cortez, or Pollo as we call him, the goalkeeper that was signed.
He's the one that got late in the season, the ball in the nuts,
came
right
up through the academy.
His claim to fame.
I was standing right there on the sideline when that happened, and that was brutal to watch in real time, much less in slow-mo. But he is someone who came up through the academy, maintained his homegrown eligibility, but went all the way through the draft unselected. And so as soon as you go all the way through the draft unselected, your homegrown rights are moot. There's no more homegrown claims to anyone. That's why when we signed him, we had to announce him as an academy product. He wasn't officially a homegrown player because we had the opportunity to sign him out of college. We had the opportunity to draft him, and we did not do so. Therefore, we kind of forfeited those rights. So there's a lot of kids that are brought in each summer to maintain those rights, just to see where they develop, see where they go. By and large, most of them, nothing happens, just because there's a talent gap within there. But that's kind of an in-depth look at what kind of the college rules are with homegrown signings and academy players. It's all complicated, of course, because it's MLS and their roster rules and everything that goes into that. But any of the kids that I mentioned as possibilities coming out of college, they would have to be signed before the super draft coming up.
I am impressed with that. I had no idea about the how the draft works. So,
yes, and that's honestly why you see the draft kind of losing a little bit of importance as MLS academies continue to grow. Because if you think about it, you know, on an NFL standpoint, the top talent is in the top couple rounds. Well, if you're robbing half of your top talent by signing them already or bringing them on USL deals with some of these other teams, the draft has really become a top five, maybe top 10 and out. I mean, beyond that, you're really kind of grasping at straws. The club was lucky to get a player like Ja'Cory Hayes to fall to them last year. He was absolutely a top 10 prospect who fell to the club at 18, and they were ecstatic to get him there, and we see what he can do. But by and large, the draft is becoming more and more all about the top half of the first round, and kind of beyond that, you're just kind of you're picking players that maybe you think have a high ceiling and kind of seeing if they stick. But there's only so many roster spots. And so keeping some of those later round draft picks on your roster after preseason is very difficult unless they absolutely blow you away during preseason.
That's dense is all I can say.
Again, that 3 years ago, I knew nothing about, no clue whatsoever.
I will say I like the idea of the academies having more importance because it kind of brings our system in line with other systems around the world, because most people I think Jurgen was the one who always talked about this in any lecture he gave, was about how players need to stop thinking that the ultimate goal is to go to get the college scholarship necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's that you have multiple paths and kind of those paths, they can rank them, but you should always be going for getting that professional contract, so to speak. And that was kind of something I always thought was going towards. But yeah, there are. I mean, I was looking at it today. There's so many new academies that weren't around a couple years ago that the competition for players kind of makes the draft almost pointless when everybody's got some homegrown type of claim. And yeah. And especially if they keep expanding the league.
there's a rift developing within the U.S. Soccer Development Academy in terms of quality of teams, because you have MLS teams who, by and large, are free for players that have the talent to join the academy. All expenses are really paid for by the club, and there's a lot more opportunity to be signed directly from those academies. If you go play for another academy, another development academy team that's not an MLS club, for instance, in Dallas, there's two others. There's the Texans and Solar. You can still play on the same playing field as some of these MLS academies, but because there's not an MLS team that has those contracted homegrown rights, anyone who comes up through other academies outside an MLS team, those kids have to go to college, and they have to go the college route before they can go the super draft route. They cannot sign an MLS without going the college route. That's why some of those kids can go like overseas and get a start there, but there's really a disparity there between MLS academies and all the other academies because of what MLS teams can offer in terms of financing, in terms of opportunity to go pro, in terms of everything from top down. So that's kind of the next divide. And I think when everyone talks about the pay to play and all of that, there's an MLS kind of academy model, and then there's kind of everything else where all those other academies are pay to play. And there's obviously a barrier to entry there in terms of financially being able to afford that and maybe losing out on some talent. But I think that's kind of the next issue that maybe comes up in the terms of youth soccer. And don't get me wrong, I mean, the growth of the development academy is great. There's so many more talented players at every club across the country because of it. But there's a little bit of a disparity between the MLS clubs and all the other ones. And I think that's in the next 5 years is going to become a much larger issue across the nation.
Yep. I'm looking at the one in Arizona, that RSL used to have that facility. Mm-hmm. And now Barcelona has put their flag down on American soil. And while it's still pay for play, I'm tempted that I'm following that one closer than any of the others, just because I want to know what it looks like in 3 or 4 years once they've gotten a class through and had, like, because I think they are actually bringing over real people from the Barcelona Academy that have basically, they're being told, hey, you got to learn English and you got to move to America and kind of learn their system, but you're going to do the coaching that you would do here otherwise there. And so that's the one I'm really interested in, because there is kind of a dead zone between Texas and Southern California as far as soccer goes. So a lot of players, a lot of potential.
That one's very interesting, A, because it's Barcelona coming over. You're going to have kids that see the name and go there and think, oh, I can go play for Barcelona. In terms of the following through on some of the promise maybe that's being put out there, I don't know how many players they can truly develop out of there and then take back overseas. They might attract more kids than maybe the kids realize their true chance of going back overseas and playing for the parent club. But it's going to be interesting to watch. And look, if RSL pulled out of Arizona because Casa Grande is in the middle of nowhere in Arizona, and the FC Dallas used to go there for preseason for that very reason. And I never went on those trips, but in talking to people that did, it's brutal. There's literally nothing else to do but for those kids, go to school and play soccer. And so it's a grind. And it's a lot of work and it's a lot of suffering. But at the same time, if you want to be a top player and maybe have a chance at going to play for Barcelona at some level, there's an opportunity there. And it's going to be very interesting to watch. But the being in Casa Grande and kind of in the middle of nowhere, I think, was something that RSL struggled with. And also being away from the parent club a little bit. It's tough to keep an eye on some of these kids, but it's Casa Grande is no walk in the park. It's no Tempe. It's kind of like how
MMA fighters will go out to the middle of nowhere, New Mexico, for camp.
You just completely immerse yourself, and it's more power to you. But I think I'd stay here in Dallas and find a club.
I might have to agree with you. All right. Well, that's pretty much all the questions we have for you. I have one last question. So how many points you think TCU will beat Oklahoma by this weekend?
That's going to be a negligible answer.
I went to TCU, and Carter went to Oklahoma. No.
I'll tell you this. If OU can't get their defense together,
I think it depends on
you guys won't have
on
a
which
problem.
Kenny Hill shows up.
We can't stop Iowa State. We can't stop Texas Tech. We can't stop Ohio or Oklahoma State. I mean, somehow we stopped Ohio State, but I mean, that's kind of coming down after their loss this weekend. So yeah, Baker Mayfield's great. Great chance to win the Heisman, but it's a knockdown drag out fight when you got to put up 60 points in every game to even have a chance to win.
Yeah. I think both of us have had our fair share of stressful moments watching our schools play football this year.
Yes.
All right.
What's stressful?
Tristan's at Baylor.
I went to Baylor. Football. So I don't even, my Saturdays are wide open. It's actually really nice to have an off year occasionally.
That is a hashtag bright side if I've ever heard of one.
Glass half full.
Yes, there you go. All right. Well, Carter, thank you so much for joining us and for helping us out with our awards and letting us pepper you with questions. We certainly appreciate
absolutely
you coming on the show and all you do to interface between the club and us fans.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. All right.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you, everybody.